Hello.
Hey. Welcome to Rosé and DNA.
I'm Deanna.
And I'm Renee. And we're two professionals working in the field of genetics.
We are so excited to have our December episode with Michelle Connors. Michelle is from Stoughton, Massachusetts, and went to Northeastern University for her Bachelor's of Science degree in nursing from the Bouvet College of Health Science. I haven't heard that in a long time. I actually went to Northeastern myself. She was awarded the Dean's Award for Service to the School of Nursing and was recognized actually as one of the 100 most influential seniors at Northeastern University, also known as the Huntington 100, for those who aren't Huskies. After going to Northeastern, Michelle went to Boston Children's Hospital and has been there working for 12 years. She's currently working in the medical surgical ICU, where she cares for patients of all ages, trauma patients, oncology patients, stem cell transplant patients, and more, and is now in an education and policy role, which we'll hear a lot about, especially in the age of COVID, which has been an extremely important role, I'm sure. But most importantly, perhaps, Michelle is a new mom, and she just let us know that today was her first day back from maternity leave, which is just amazing. And I am so thankful that you're spending the rest of your day with us. But hopefully your glass of wine is going to help with that. So welcome.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here too.
Yeah, and as Renee said, you know, we're glad to be celebrating with you on your first day back with a glass of wine. And something that we like to do at the beginning of every episode is just tell everyone, you know, what you're enjoying. Usually our podcasts are like scheduled in the middle of the day, so it's nice that this one is actually in the evening and it's a reasonable hour to be having a glass of wine. So yeah, Renee, how about you?
So today I am drinking a Syrah, which is different from my usual Cabernet Sauvignon or a rosé. Honestly, it was from one of those like boxes, like it's called like Splash Wine or something. It's one of those subscription boxes. So I just pulled out a bottle. So if Splash ever wants to sponsor the podcast, wink, wink. But today, yeah, I'm having a Radford Dale Syrah. It's from South Africa and it is a red wine, and that's all I can give you. But it's very tasty. How about you, Deanna?
Well, I decided to switch it up because I was feeling pretty festive, and I feel like I've been getting all of those like articles lately that are, you know, Christmas cocktail recipes. Mm-hmm. So I decided to make a hot chocolate with some peppermint vodka, just a little bit. I wanted to try something a little different, and it's obviously very, very good. Very in the holiday spirit.
My pursuit of Christmas cocktails around this time sometimes gets aggressive. Like I just, something about it, I'm just like, I need to make all of them. But
the articles are, yeah, they're really convincing.
I am drinking it's called McBride Sisters Red Blend. Mm-hmm. Have you had any of them before?
I think I drank that on one of the past episodes, actually. Yeah, so one of their wines, yeah.
I went to Total Wines because the one that I had here was at my house was one that a friend had suggested, but it was called Freak Show Wine. And Phil was like, you cannot drink that on a podcast with genetic counselors. That is a triggering term. And I was like, I'm sorry. And so I went and I was just going based off like ratings and stuff. And then when I got home, I Googled the company and it was really awesome. I was like happy to see that it was a Black owned business, two sisters, yeah, sort of the winery. So I just thought that was fantastic. And, and I'm not drinking a wine that has a less than sensitive name.
But yeah, no, McBride Sisters are amazing. I've really enjoyed all of the, I think I've had like their sparkling rosé and their regular rosé and the red blend. So big fan. Great. Well, should we dig into it?
I think so. Well, of course, the questions we always like to start with are the easy ones. You know, we always love to ask you a little bit about your roots and your childhood. So can you tell us a little bit about, you know, what it was like growing up and, you know, what you were like as a child and what you liked doing at that time?
So I grew up in the town I'm living in now, Stoughton, Massachusetts. I have an older sister and who still lives with my parents too, like totes cool. We're all a Stoughton family. and it was great. So my mom is actually a nurse as well, as is my sister. We're a family of nurses. So it was growing up, like, I mean, my sister and I are best friends. Like, it was fantastic to just like have those influences in my life. It's funny, I always kind of wanted to do anything but nursing when I was younger, just because it was so, like, my mom was a nurse. I had to do something else. But as you can see, I failed in that pursuit. But I think it was mostly because, like, I knew I wanted to do something medical. So that was always well supported in my household.
Mm-hmm. Was there a particular moment when you were kind of like rebelling against that idea of nursing? Was there a particular moment in your youth when you kind of just decided, I'm going to go for it?
When I was applying to colleges or looking at colleges my junior year of high school, I was actually looking at schools for physical therapy and just like other kind of like health sciences, whether it was pharmacy, which I wasn't totally into, like allied health, anything else really. And then my sister, who also went to Northeastern, is a year older than me. So I went to a day of classes with her. And as a nursing major, and I just really loved it. And I was realizing that I was kind of trying to run away from something that I was like maybe destined to do. I decided to just go for it and apply for nursing. I just didn't want to fall into that like whole cliche of like nurses who have nurses and that kind of thing. But I realized that like that was what I wanted to do. Kind of growing up, I'm sure all of you, I mean, you remember like growing up, you would play house or play anything, like any pretend games. My sister and I would play pretend visiting nurses association, because my mom did she works in obstetrics and like labor and delivery specifically. And so she did home care for also like for new moms. And we would like take the paperwork, fill it out, it's just like such like, I'm like, why was I running away from this? Clearly this was something that like I always knew that I wanted to be in the medical field. And like, this was, and like this kind of like patient care and taking care of people, specifically children, really came naturally. Mm-hmm.
And I guess since that point, you went to Northeastern, went through that entire nursing program, which you kind of declared at the beginning of your 4 years. And since then, you went down the street, right down Longwood to Boston Children's Hospital, and have been there now for over a decade. What made you decide specifically on pediatrics?
So I benefited a lot from Northeastern's co-op program. My first one was at Mass General Hospital in their emergency department. I kind of right off the bat knew that I wanted to do something critical care. Like, I was just always kind of that level of extreme when it came to, I wasn't really the like coddling, like super sweet type of nurse, like the one that is just wants to see the action. So that was fantastic. And while I was there, you rotate through different sections, whether it's trauma or fast track, triage, and one of them is pediatrics, which I really, really loved. I didn't expect to love it as much as I did, but then it made me decide to apply to Children's Hospital for my second co-op. And there I was on the stem cell transplant unit, which again was, I loved. It was an amazing experience. The Jimmy Fund program with Children's Hospital is just so wonderful. And the families they get to treat are fantastic. And from there, I missed that critical care setting. So I decided to, I did my third co-op in the neonatal intensive care unit. And then my like formal like senior practicum, or that like last nurse training you get in your education, I did it on the floor in which I work now. And so they hired me based off of that, and I've been there ever since. So it was just kind of like and I ended up in a role where I got to really combine all of the things that I loved, where it was both, I get to treat neonates, I get to treat older kids, I get to treat stem cell patient transplants, and I get that hot, fast pace, high acuity emergency room feel, but not as a treat them and street them as the emergency room gets to do. But it's wonderful.
And how, I guess I'm curious how that role maybe has evolved in the last decade that you've been there. Because I know now you're, you know, working in more of the infectious disease program and, you know, have that more education policy type of role. So how has your role evolved over that period of time?
So I work three shifts a week, three 12-hour shifts, and one of them is still at the bedside, which I feel very fortunate that I get to do a combination. But like you said, the other ones are faced, I'm the infection prevention coordinator for my unit. So my role is to interpret and educate nurses on different policy changes specifically related to infection prevention, any kind of hospital infection that is acquired while from like the patients acquire while there. I investigate it, report it, track it, find ways to have it not happen again, because it's obviously from both a risk and financial standpoint, terrible for the hospital. And then with COVID happening, it's been a lot of interpreting and disseminating that information. Because I'm sure, as you all remember, what we knew in March 2020 is definitely not what we knew now. And to have to go through that learning process in real time was incredibly stressful for healthcare workers. And so a lot of times it was either someone that they could go to as a resource or the person that they could yell at when they were not feeling whatever I was saying.
Yeah. No, I can't even imagine, you know, stepping into a role like that during COVID, especially in a pediatric hospital. Like, I'm sure that actually added a layer of complexity to it that, you know, we ourselves weren't experiencing, you know, dealing more with adult patients at Mass General.
I mean, if anything, I feel fortunate to be in a pediatric setting because we pediatric patients just were not getting as sick as adult patients. So that same, so what those like mass quantities of patients and tearing down other floors to build more ICU beds and things like that, we didn't experience. We were able to absorb all the pediatric patients for the state of Massachusetts when their pediatric units were shut down at different hospitals. But other than that, we did see COVID patients, especially with our acute, our chronically ill or immunocompromised populations. And then also once that multi-system inflammatory process was discovered, especially among children, we would see that form of it. But our hospital is equipped with a biocontainment unit, which was initially created with the Ebola scare. And it's funny where it's almost like the impact of COVID kind of traveled around the hospital, where they initially saw it as something that would be strictly into like the respiratory medical ICU. And then as symptoms started presenting in different ways in different populations, it kind of traveled around like the cardiac ICU and then like here, like on my floor in the medical surgical ICU. So I sympathize with nurses across the country that were put in horrible situations. And I feel fortunate for the support and break that pediatric nurses had gotten from like the mass impact of that.
Yeah, and we definitely want to ask that about kind of related to that burnout that I think especially nurses have had to face in this last couple of years. So going back to, well, one of my siblings, she works in pediatrics but in psych, and she at the time, like especially in the beginning, she let me know that like that actually has been one of the more, I mean, she works in psych, so obviously that she sees it more, but I've heard that medical ICUs or like med floors have actually had to take on this influx of children who are exhibiting for the first time with psychiatric illness due to the effects of COVID and what that has done to them. Have you seen that on your floor or experienced that with other floors at the hospital?
Absolutely. The lack of resources present for children suffering with mental illness, really anyone suffering from mental illness, but we'll focus on children for this, became so apparent in 2020. And it was we really, as far as in the state of Massachusetts, really do not have much for resources for children, especially those who need inpatient medical beds. And that was happening more and more, where these kids were having their entire lives turned upside down and really suffering. And there are, if anything, even though our emergency room wasn't completely packed with COVID, it was inundated with children who were on psychiatric holds in the emergency room. And I'm talking like in like the 40s to 50 patients at a time of like children requiring one-to-one sitters for suicidal ideation, psychotic episodes. And it's been very taxing on already dwindling staffing numbers and really like hospital flow, where initially when hospitals were trying to like just scramble to make up for elective procedures that they had canceled, you're kind of in a gridlock of needing to put patients who require these beds for mental health reasons and cancel those surgeries. So it's, I feel like I went to like a, just maybe like six talks about like, this is an this is the epidemic of what we're going through now is like mental health and stuff. But even still, I feel like there really was no solution. It was like, we continued to just bring it up and talk about it and have awareness. But as far as like actually creating the resources, actually having the beds for these patients, it's not something that we have yet.
Wow. It is. It's completely tragic. And it's that's a lot to put on providers too, especially providers that maybe didn't, you know, want to specialize in psych for particular reasons. And now that is, you know, each floor is kind of taking that on as part of the hospital's duty. But, you know, that that can be heavy when you're kind of inundated with something that you're not necessarily prepared for. But I think that's kind of the experience of the last 2 years for everyone, I would say. But going back to your role in education and policy for infectious disease, what have been some of the most important things that you've learned in this role in terms of educating and communicating this information that's just changing at such a rapid pace? And, you know, you're educating your colleagues who are also very well educated in terms of these things. So how did that dynamic go?
I think that just kind of with any profession really, but I specifically nursing, there can be such a wide range of personalities and educational backgrounds as well. There's a lot of different ways to get a nursing degree. And I found that I had to be creative about the way I was educating people, giving out information in many different forms, whether it's requiring me to personally talk to every single person or show them something or do it myself to show that they to kind of lead by example. Posters literally everywhere, videos, online modules, everything that kind of just got to every single person. Because it's funny when whenever you're really like giving education in the hospital setting, sometimes a lot of it can feel like, oh, this is if this ever happens. So to be dealing with something in real time, be like, no, this is actually happening. We're not preparing for something that might happen in the future. We need to be ready now. And so, and then dealing with fear too. There was a lot of fear, a lot of people essentially feeling like I didn't sign up for this. Yeah. I wanted to be a nurse, but this isn't, I didn't want to put myself or my family in danger just to do this. So really learning to be compassionate again with providing education as well, so that you're sympathizing with how people are feeling, supporting them through what they're feeling, but also relaying the importance of what they need to know to keep themselves and their patients safe.
Wow. Yeah, it's interesting too, because I think, you know, obviously the first people we think about when we're talking about science communication is, you know, the patient. But like you're saying, just being able to communicate with other coworkers and people working at the hospital about these topics is just as equally as important. I'm curious, when you are building these materials and, you know, getting the message out there, are you working with a team of people, or is it really just you know, you kind of on your own leading the charge.
No, definitely have lots of support. Our hospital has an infection prevention and control department that really, and they deal with everything from, I mean, initial infectious disease issues even before COVID, but specifically related to COVID, they were the ones that were doing contact tracing, vaccines. Once those finally came out, they were providing like the materials so that we could put signs up to socially distance our units. And they were the ones letting us know what the status of PPE was, so that we were able to get that through. Children's Hospital was one of the hospitals that had access to the ultraviolet light that would clean masks. Mm-hmm. And so we were recycling N95s in that way. No longer doing that anymore. It's actually insane the difference of PPE usage now. Mm. But there was definitely lots of support from the hospital in some days I even felt bad where I'm like, I feel like we're getting a lot of support for the amount of COVID patients we have, when there's like hospitals that are like, I've been using this mask that I keep in a Tupperware for 10 months. It's nice to have those resources to fall back on, because that was another really difficult position to be in, where there were people as you probably know, there are people in healthcare who like didn't necessarily believe something was going on, didn't really believe the severity, don't believe in getting vaccinated, and you still have to provide information to these people and show them that this is really going on, and make sure that they are not spreading information that's false or creating a mood among the unit that could possibly really hinder morale or safety, really.
Yeah. So what made you apply for this role? Like, were you looking for a switch in your career, or was it like once COVID had started, you just kind of felt like you needed to do something towards the pandemic, or how did that happen?
I always had seen myself as like pursuing some sort of leadership role on my unit. I was a very stereotypical like go-getter in high school, with like wanting to be like president of everything. And so this was a really great opportunity for me to kind of step away partly from the bedside and be able to both explore like the academic portion of my job and how the hospital runs, and then also to kind of get a break, because burnout is real, and sometimes you do need to switch it up. And it felt like a pretty low risk way for me to really get my feet wet in discovering other portions of nursing that wasn't just at the bedside. And I actually learned to like really, really enjoy it. And I like the mental challenge that it's giving me. But yeah, the we'll call that mom brain.
That is totally understandable. Yeah,
we'll circle back. But essentially, yes, I wanted the challenge. And this like opportunity came up when Infection Prevention Hospital-wide had poached our infection coordinator. And so I was very excited to have that opportunity.
That seems like a great opportunity. And I'm sure they're very lucky to have you on their team. And you did mention a little bit about burnout, and this role might help with that to some extent, but I'm sure you're still probably experiencing some burnout just given, you know, all of the roles that you're taking on. So I'm curious how you have been dealing with the burnout and how you make time to take care of yourself while also taking care of your patients. And then, of course, your new baby.
I have noticed that the hospitals are finally recognizing the amount of or the level of exodus that is happening. And this, it's not just Children's Hospital. It's every hospital in Boston. It's across the country and probably even the world, because a lot of people are feeling fatigued from what's going on. As a profession, not only nurses, but I think a lot of people in the healthcare system felt very unsupported in the wake of COVID. So whether it's seeking other opportunities outside of hospitals or just not even working in healthcare anymore, we're still seeing a lot of people just leaving. And for myself, I just try and kind of like remember why I do what I do. I'm fortunate to have a lot of personal and like social satisfaction in my job, and that I feel very strongly for my coworkers, and it's a very family-esque vibe. And so that added pull towards my job kind of always keeps me going, always keeps me wanting to come to work. But I feel like I've always been really good at being able to leave the really painful parts of my job at work and not bring it home. And that has been the best way for me to protect myself when it comes to caregiver, like compassion fatigue or burnout. I just know that there are different modes of support that I could seek out. So I'm lucky to have a partner who also is very good about talking. He loves to talk about what's going on in his job. So I always feel open to be able to discuss my feelings with that. And I think that some people don't have that. And that is, it's huge to be able to really talk out something that is bothering you and have another perspective. So
tell us more about that. Because of course we know your husband, and I'd love to know, you know, what your thoughts are on working in the same field as your partner and being able to have those conversations, especially right now when, you know, we're all, well, to some extent, we're all working from home. And, you know, there's just a lot of time to talk about these kinds of things. So, you know, I'm curious, before COVID and now during COVID, what it's like working in the same field as your partner and spending all of the time together.
So it was definitely great getting to when we both being in the same field of healthcare, we would both kind of speak the same language, where if you're talking about something they understand, you don't have to like dumb it down too much. I think Phil definitely takes it to the next level of his knowing about things. And I'm just like, you do actually know what that is. But no, I guess he really is that smart sometimes. But it's with having him at home, when the pandemic first hit, when I was just a bedside nurse, I was only working permanent night shift. So there's definitely like a level of separation in our lives that naturally occurred, because like there was three nights out of the week I wasn't even at home sleeping in the same bed as him, because we were sleeping in it at different times. And so initially, like when the pandemic first hit, I was like, this is so fun. It's like a sleepover. Like he's home every day. And then like the lack of home office and the fact that he was like working in our dining room really started to get to me. And I like would make comments about, like, I was like, I just feel like the voice that you're speaking in, talking to these patients, like, I don't know. Like, I don't know how I would respond to that. And he's just like, stop. No, this is not open for discussion. Like, I don't need that from you. And so we definitely would get on each other's nerves with the togetherness. But that has, the togetherness reached a whole new level on maternity leave. So him going back to work was like, though it was sad, it was a little bit of a blessing, because we needed some of our alone time again.
Yeah. No, I feel like so many people have, I've heard so many people say that. I mean, I've definitely experienced that too. Like, it's that we are not used to spending this much time with anyone. And so, especially when we're mixing work in with that, I can imagine that adds an additional challenge to the mix. But it sounds like you've also found ways to like support each other because of that shared knowingness of, you know, how hard this is on non-healthcare workers. And so that's good that, you know, you can get some support out of it too.
Yeah. I definitely always make fun of him for, I feel like sometimes, like, I feel like you're trying to outsad me with this story right now. And I was like, I get it. Like, your day was hard, but like, listen to my day and stuff. So there's also some friendly competition when it comes to the patients we take care of.
You know, so the biggest, I guess, challenge or new life challenge that the two of you have faced, but mostly I don't want to give Phil too much credit or talk too much about him because this is all about you. And you are a new mom. So what has that been like?
It has been crazy to go from doing whatever I wanted, whatever, to having a full-blown human that I'm responsible for is a crazy change, but it's so wonderful. He's a fantastic baby, and I like have just like a person that I get to smooch on his face whenever I want, and like I'll definitely like teach him about the importance of consent, but for now I'm going to just cruise his face whenever I want. No, but it's been really great. We in the same year, like with having Callum, that's his name, have moved back to our hometown, and there's been like a lot of changes. Yeah. So the difference that our life has been from December 2020 to December 2021 is extreme, but mm-hmm. it's like fantastic to be settling into this like new chapter of life.
Well, he is absolutely adorable. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned that today was your first day back at work. And I think when we were discussing the, you know, you being on the podcast before, we alluded to the fact that you have some thoughts on maternity leave and how that works in this country, especially going through that. And we realized as we were, you know, talking through this, I think we've on the podcast have shied away a little bit from like trying to like, you know, identify someone's career, like talk about their career, but also like bring in their family life, because I think people deserve to just talk about their careers. But sounds like you have some thoughts on maternity leave and how that intersects with parenthood and all of that. So I'd love to hear your thoughts there.
Oh, completely. So I can definitely say that maternity leave was nothing that I expected. You don't expect it to be like a break, yeah, because like you're taking care of a whole human, but like, oh my goodness, when it comes to like the like emotional and physical toll that you feel that whole time, it's like, of course everyone should have a right to have this many weeks off, because it's just like, it's painful in so many different ways. And mm-hmm. to live in a state where we do have that is fantastic. I will say though, oh my goodness, do they make it difficult. I feel like this is like the level of hoops you have to run through, yeah, just to kind of navigate your way through any kind of government run program is just like so ridiculous. I can imagine that mm-hmm. some people like aren't even able to access these benefits because of how difficult it was. And even my own hospital that has employees going on maternity leave all the time really did not like go out of their way to like help set it up, make sure that you were in a financially stable spot. Mm-hmm. They even like make it so you get to use your benefits, but you can't pay them, and you have to like double pay them when you're back. So you're like working at like a financial deficit for months and months and months, because even like the state amount that they are currently giving, they have increased the amount. So thank goodness for that. But it's very low even for what anyone makes. But I feel fortunate that people who otherwise wouldn't have access to job security, wouldn't have access to any kind of maternity leave, have that. And that like definitely like made me feel better when I was just like on the phone for the fifth hour trying to talk to somebody about making sure that I was actually getting like the benefit amount that I deserve, essentially. So it was definitely frustrating. And I hope that we're able to get another chance to give these benefits to more people on a federal level and actually work on these programs so that they are useful to mothers, and you're not like hours postpartum trying to get paperwork together and prove that you actually had a baby so that you can get a paycheck or some kind of check so that you can pay your mortgage. Like, it's insane. But I can only hope that like we can continue to like support any kind of like advocacy that helps out moms from both like a financial or families in general. Any kind of birthing person deserves these benefits. Yeah. And it was eye opening to see how difficult it was even when it shouldn't have been.
Yeah. It's such a good point too. Like having someone to help you through that process of applying, you know, applying for those types of benefits. Like, I'm not a paperwork person. I like can't even imagine trying to keep all of that straight and like, you know, knowing which forms to submit and which offices you have to call. Like, I can't imagine doing that. And especially if I, you know, didn't have medical training or, you know, didn't have any sort of background in healthcare, like that you'd be completely lost. And yeah, it's just, it's horrible that there aren't, you know, better services for navigating that system.
Yeah, I agree. Let's keep pushing on that. But yeah, no, thank you for sharing that. I think it's a perspective that we haven't really heard, is like that period of time and then making your way back to work and like that going from like, it's just such a shift in mindset, I'm sure, going from like work to maternity leave, back to work, but also essentially a different human because you're caring for another human at the same time. How did you feel today going back?
I was definitely a nervous wreck last night. I tend to channel some of my anxiety into like very obsessive behavior. So there was I almost like set the stage for every kind of scenario that my mother-in-law could have while watching Callum today, and like did things like set up a whiteboard for her to chart all of the like things that she gave him, to, like whether it's like bottle amounts to diapers that she changed. And so it was ultimately being at work, being on the other side, it was great. It was amazing for me to be able to just like get an idea of what life will be like when I can both be professional Michelle and mom Michelle. Mm-hmm. But it's definitely so hard to kind of switch back and forth and make that change where you're still always, I think like, people say like, oh, it's like having your heart on the outside of your body, and like it also feels like they are holding pieces of your brain too. And so it's just like always like a small, like a piece of you that's like not completely there. So just kind of getting used to that, and then also the effect that it has like on our schedules. And Phil like rushing home so that he can start like the bedtime routine that I'm so aggressive about. And these are things that like what did we even do after work before we had kids? Like, oh my goodness, like I don't even know what free time is anymore. And so that's been a definite adjustment, where your time is never your time anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, such a new balance.
As you can see, I'm still wearing my work.
Yes. And again, we are so thankful. I still cannot believe that you're talking to us right now. But on that note, we have a few more questions for you. So before we get to the rapid fire round, which we love so much, we love to ask folks in terms of your career, but life in general, what are you most proud of and what are you most looking forward to?
For my career, what I'm most proud of is... I feel like the level of, I don't want to say importance because that sounds so douchey. like the level of, I don't know, just impact that I have on my unit when I think about like we do get like some of the sickest patients in the entire world, where like the, and to be like one of the leading nurses on that unit, like really does, like when I sit back and think about it, I'm like, oh my gosh, like this is insane. For someone who was trying desperately not to go into nursing, it just like, it feels great sometimes. And like to anytime like I get recognized for like the work that's done, it's just, it's really humbling and really I don't know. It just, it makes you feel great. And like, as much as like, you don't want to like rely on the thoughts of others to make you feel good about your own career, like it really does feel fantastic. But I'm proud of myself for like the strides that I have been able to make like within the unit that I work on.
That's awesome. And going forward, what are you excited about?
Going forward, I'm excited for growth that I hope to work towards and see in myself. I definitely don't want to stop here when it comes to hospital leadership. And I hope to continue to like keep pushing, whether it be like once I'm able to fully turn my brain back on and not think so much about newborn things, whether it's like pursuing more education so that I can move forward in that, it would be fantastic.
What would the next step of education be for nurse?
Yeah, so it's very, I mean, it's almost like in the way that obviously like you have to have a master's degree to be a genetic counselor, and it's almost like trying to move forward to the next degree. Nursing is seeing that too, where like initially everyone had their associates, and now then you needed your bachelor's, and now it's almost like everyone needs their master's. And I don't have a master's yet, so something that I would ultimately like to work towards. But there's many branches, whether it's working in hospital informatics, leadership, formal education, and for nursing, I've always enjoyed that. Usually I just teach clinical, meaning like bringing students onto inpatient floors and teaching them there, but in the classroom setting would also be fantastic too. I don't know. I feel like with most healthcare professions, there's just so many different outlets where you can continue to use your degree in different ways. And that's what I'm hoping, that I can continue to have that freedom to do whatever I want to do with a nursing degree.
So exciting. Well, the world is your oyster. Many, many options, many options to come. Well, as Renee said, we have some rapid fire questions. So these are our fun questions for you. So we can just jump in and get started. So the first one is, if you could have one superpower, what would it be?
If I could have a superpower, I think I would want time travel. And I know it gets tricky with like, you know, like when you get like deep into it with like seeing, with making sure you're not seen and that kind of thing. But like, I've always been like very hyper-focused on like wanting to know the future slash like being like, I wonder what it would have been like to like be standing in Times Square in like 1919, like dumb things like that, you know. So it'd be like recreational time travel, but also use it for my benefit,
not to like win the lottery or anything. Just,
I mean, like, I don't want to use my powers for evil, but like if it's necessary, yes, you know, for me, maybe I could be a career time traveler by doing things like that.
Yeah.
All right. So imagine it's your last meal. What do you want?
Oh my God. My last meal, I would want.
This is a little bit morbid. I pulled it from somewhere. I don't know, Renee.
I'm about to die, so I'm going to have a Pokeball.
What's your favorite food? Let's just leave it. If you could eat all of your favorite foods at one time, what would that be?
So yeah, I would definitely like have some form of sushi, like like spicy ahi tuna. I would say poke bowl, because like I just like, I like the liberty of the broke down version. And then also like some kind of sandwich on the side.
Like peanut butter and jelly, or like,
oh no, no. It would be like a sub. Okay. Like I would think like maybe like steak and cheese, or like an Italian sub, like something like cold cutty maybe. I don't know. Like it would be a heavy meal that wouldn't mix. But I just like, I would need to get all the, touch all the tastes.
That's really funny that you say that. So one, I've been like craving poke, but my husband isn't like super into it, so we haven't gotten it. But I've had an Italian sub like 2 days in a row. So we are on the same food page.
We need to get together and eat.
All right. If you could listen to one band or musician for your entire life, what would it be? Sorry. Wow. All of these are so like ultimatum. I'm dying.
I think I ripped them off of somewhere.
Expecting me held against a wall of these rapid fire questions. Okay, this is tough because, oh my gosh, you know,
I didn't think it would be so stressful.
I'm gonna say Beyonce merely based off range because like I need some hype up music always. She provides a good catalog to work out to, but yeah, she's also bringing vocals in her ballads, so sure I think that range wise it's gonna be okay with Beyonce.
Yeah,
you know, she's not my favorite artist, but she's up there. Yeah, she's up there.
Yeah. And she has so much music out there. So like, you know, you wouldn't get sick of it. Okay. The next one. I hope this isn't scary. What is something that you wish you were better at or a skill you'd like to develop?
Ooh. I've always wanted to be able to play an instrument, like desperately tried. Like I tried to play the flute. It was horrid, can barely read music at all. Can't read music, even though I've been also to like maybe like 200 piano lessons E2. So I really like, I am so envious of anyone who can play an instrument, and I wish I could.
And you kind of alluded to this before, but if you weren't a nurse, what would you be doing? It could be anything.
I think that if I wasn't a nurse, I would be a fitness dance instructor. Yeah, I just like, I think it's anyone who is like a fitness instructor by like your job, like I just am so envious of. I was like, oh, you get to live the life where like you get to work out and someone pays you for it. But also like I kind of associate being like a fitness dance instructor with also being just like a professional hype woman, and so I think that would suit me well. Like that's how I like to live my life, as like an uninvited dance instructor.
Oh, I love it. Well, you know, there's always a second career option,
right? I mean, like it could be a side hustle. Yeah, so exactly. I really, yeah. Maybe don't get my master's. Maybe just like start to work for like 305 Fitness or something.
Yeah. Right. And our last question, what would be the advice you would give yourself and to our listeners when you were first starting out your career?
I would say that you should absolutely know your worth. I think that now, especially like newer generations and just anyone applying for a job now, it's taught so much more how important like your skills are and what you're bringing to the table. When I was applying for jobs, it was very much like, oh my gosh, thank you so much for this opportunity. Yes, you can pay me $1 an hour. And so I think that that's so important, that like whether it's young nurses or anyone just coming out of school, knows how important their education and what they're doing and their voice is, and that they when they're starting out in their career, that they're able to use that, and whether it's get paid accordingly or just do what they need to do and say what they have to say.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah. All right, so we have made it to the end, but before we let you go, one thing that we love to ask folks to do at the end is promote something, whether that be a charity that you really care about, some sort of local business, an organization, legislation, anything that you would like to share with listeners.
I think like in this holiday season, I like have been actively trying to shop small in any kind of way that I can, or just like look for some kind of way to support anyone that is independently run and stuff. And I've been exposed to a lot of things in like the whole baby sect of consumerism. So I don't know. I don't even have like a specific shop that I would suggest, but but whenever I think of something that I need, because that's a common trend of parenthood is trying to buy your way out of your problems. I do try and I look for something that is just like a family owned business or something before, and hopefully more people start doing that too. Mm-hmm. So that like we have, whether it's like businesses or even restaurants that are surviving in this COVID time.
Yeah. Well, great. Thank you. I had so much fun and laughed a lot.
Thank you for having me. I was so nervous. I like saw that you had like a basically genetic counseling celebrity on your last podcast. So hopefully people want to hear from a pediatric nurse too. Oh, yeah.
I'm sure they will. Yeah, no, this has been so much fun. And mm-hmm. I mean, I think that's exactly why we wanted to speak with you. It's, you know, we don't have that perspective, and it's a perspective that was extremely important, especially right now. So thank you for sharing your experience.
Thank you for having me. I had fun drinking with you guys.
Same.
On a school night. Yeah.
If you'd like to nominate someone to be on our podcast, please reach out to us via Twitter or Instagram at RoseanneDNA or our website, RoseanneDNA.com.
And in the meantime, be well, be empowered, and cheers. Cheers.